In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, October 28th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Friday at 3 is always the Federal News Countdown. Today is no exception. Two people who are experts in the world of the federal government have chosen the news stories that they think are the three most important to people who work for the federal government. They've ranked them in order from number three to number one, and they're here in studio with me to count them down on the Federal News Countdown. My experts this week are Bill Bransford, partner in the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and one of the co-hosts of Fed Talk every Friday morning at 11. It's great to see you, Bill. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here, Francis.
And Diane Cochran of Kelly Anderson and veteran of the Department of Defense, OPM, among other agencies. Great to see you again, Diane. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You've each chosen your three most important federal news stories of the week, and of course we start with...
Number three!
The third most important federal news story of the week, according to you, Diane Cochran, is the buyout watch on GovExec, and we have a similar one on federalnewsradio.com, but it just seems like every day there's another agency. Maybe it's not a lot of jobs, maybe it's just a few, or maybe it's only one portion of an agency, but the buyouts and early outs seem to be piling up on a pretty consistent basis.
That's right, and I think the first thing agencies do when there's budget problems is look to reduce their staff, mm-hmm. and buyouts are a very popular way of doing that. However, buyouts don't usually yield the kind of attrition that they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that concerns me as I watch the buyout projections, I see Defense has a great number. Air Force has 4,000. Army has 7,500. We haven't seen the rest of Defense yet. And various agencies have varying numbers of buyouts that they're projecting. I think this will increase.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that does concern me about the use of buyouts, as buyouts have been in effect for 20 years, is that the strategic planning for buyouts isn't usually there. It's usually let's cut, let's get rid of, let's reduce our numbers without a great deal of thought to what the mission critical needs of the agency are. For example, one agency a couple of years ago, one office bought out their entire HR staff.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't very smart because typically in these times you need good HR people to manage the right sizing of the agency.
Yeah.
So it's usually the older people that go.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually the corporate knowledge that go. And the recent look that I had at FedScope, as of June, there were about 2,100,000 federal workers, roughly, in
mm-hmm.
June. I did a little statistical analysis there. Almost a million are over 50 of that 2,100,000.
So nearly half the full workforce.
Are over 50.
Over 50.
Guess who's going to be taking these buyouts and early outs?
Exactly.
And whatever early outs there are. Under 30, we have less than 250,000 people in the federal workforce under 30. So we're creating a huge bathtub effect when the older workers leave, and
mm-hmm.
I think that's where we're going the next couple of years. We're going to see a lot of corporate knowledge and a lot of experience go out the door with very little in the pipeline to support the mission of the government.
A couple of quick questions about buyouts. The dollar number has not changed since the 90s, and $25,000 doesn't buy what it did in 1996.
And fewer people are taking it.
Well, and that's where I wanted to go. I mean, if you think about it from the point of view of an employee sitting at his desk and going, well, geez, the last time they did it was the same amount of money, but in that dollars, it's really only about $15,000.
Correct.
It doesn't strike me as an amount of money that's sufficient to make somebody go, woo, I really want to look at this.
I'll tell you where it's attractive. That older group of people, the over 50 crowd,
mm-hmm.
many of them are eligible for optional retirement right now.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them have months and months of annual leave saved up. That extra $15,000 is icing on the cake, so they'll take it
mm-hmm.
if buyouts are offered. I know
yeah.
there's proposals in some of the deficit reduction plans that call for an end to buyouts. I don't know if that will happen because
mm-hmm.
it is very minimal money. But the people that I think that will take advantage of this are that 900,000 plus people that are over 50. And we'll see that knowledge drain
mm-hmm.
happen very, very suddenly.
The other question I had very quickly is, since this is a budget tool and it has the greatest impact at the beginning of the budget year, which is where we are right now, beginning of the fiscal year, do you think it's likely that we'll continue to see buyouts available through the rest of the fiscal year just because of where we are budget-wise, or will a lot of them be front-loaded to this part of the fiscal year and there'll be a more of a trickling effect throughout the rest of the year?
I think it'll be a trickling effect because I don't think the budget situation is going to get any better.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're living quarter to quarter
right.
on continuing resolutions. So I think that we'll see buyouts continue for quite a while. And my concern, again, is that agencies aren't using this as a management tool to shape the workforce strategically. They're using it as a way to cut staff, which doesn't bode well.
Diane Cochran's number three story is the Buyout Watch from GovExec, linked up at federalnewsradio.com. Bill Bransford, your number three story in the countdown this week is the 2012 House calendar, keeping 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, is the Republican plan there from the Washington Post. It's not a lot of time to really get anything accomplished
just make an observation that Herman Cain has his 999 program. We all know that relates to taxes, sales tax, income tax.
Yes.
I'd like to add one more nine to the equation, and that's the 9% approval rating that Congress has.
Yes.
And of course, this type of activity doesn't do much to improve that that approval rating, because it results in even less getting done. The problem is that not only is Congress the House 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off, but the House and Senate don't overlap.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's this year, recently, in the last couple months, November 1st through 4th is one of the only times that they're going to be overlapping, the result being that there's little coordination. If a law, you're up against the deadline, like the continuing resolution that's going to expire November 18th, well, what happens if one of the houses is not in session and it comes up against the deadline? It results in a lot of dysfunction. Also, a lot less gets done. Now, the House says, oh, we've passed all these laws, we've had all these votes, but there's a recognition also that they're going to run into issues and difficulty with the Senate, then those issues have to be resolved if you're going to get any bills that become an act that get signed by the president. It takes some work and some coordination between the two houses, and it seems like this continuation of what we're doing this year and doing even more next year is really not productive, and I don't think it's resonating well with the American people.
When we're a little bit more than a year out from an election, any thoughts about whether this might get better in the second part of this Congress when they come back in January?
I don't see it changing. I think that there have been people that have decided this is an effective political strategy, and they're going to go ahead with it. And despite the 9% rating, and there was even in the article that I quoted, I don't know if this is true or not, but in the article that I quoted, there was a speculation that part of the reason for doing this is to allow more members of Congress, particularly the newly elected Republican members, the freshman members, the chance to spend a lot of time back in their districts because they're facing or may face tough reelection campaigns next year. And this, of course, gives them more time to connect with their constituents. But I say, well, connecting with your constituents is important because you need to find out what they care about. But getting legislation through Congress is also important. And you need to be in Washington coordinating with the other house, and you need to be in session to do that.
As you say, each house has the option of making its own schedule, but the lack of coordination, I think, is what struck me the most about this. As you mentioned, for the four-week period from October 17th to November 14th, and this is the time window just before the continuing resolutions expected to expire, both chambers simultaneously in session, only 4 days from November 1st to November 4th. Now, the super committee has continued to meet, but that's only six members from each chamber.
That's right.
And
we're going to talk about the super committee a little later.
Yeah,
I think.
The super committee is farther along in the countdown, of course, because it seems to have all of Washington in its thrall because of just the lack of any activity in anticipation of what the super committee might do. But the fact of the matter is there are no appropriations bills done. So there will have to be some kind of activity, I imagine, after November 4th, because that's next Friday, and there doesn't seem to be any indication that there are going to be any bills passed, any appropriations bills passed by next Friday.
And then we have the CR expiring, and so I would expect that CR, when it expires, will be extended to December 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know. I wish I did.
And nobody else does either. And that, I think, is the where we're seeing all the frustration that we're seeing inside the agencies. Bill Bransford, story number three in the countdown this week's from the Washington Post. It's about the House of Representatives calendar between now and the end of the year. And you can read it at federalnewsradio.com. It is linked up there. The number two stories of the week is chosen by Bill Bransford and Diane Cochran when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tickets are on sale now for the third annual Caps Care Casino Night and Auction benefiting Washington Capitals Charities, Friday, February 10th at the Hilton Alexandria Mark Center. Enjoy a night of gaming, live music, and mingling with your favorite Caps players and coaches, all in the name of charity. Tickets are going fast, so don't miss out on this fun and exciting event. Visit washingtoncaps.com/casinonight to purchase tickets today.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Nova Daily public policy consultant at Wiley Rhine commented during the panel discussion, the cybersecurity dilemma, incentives to drive change rather than reactive response.
It is a global playing field out there, and no matter whether your business is located in Iowa or Bangladesh or Beijing, you can be subject to the same vulnerabilities. Just a broad sphere and spectrum of ways that bad actors can get into your system is unbelievable.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. Today, computer attacks are more frequent, distributed, easy to mount, persistent, and disruptive than ever before. Some sectors are doing a better job than others in proactively addressing these concerns, though most do so following an attack. Booz Allen Hamilton believes that incentives which may or may not currently exist can stimulate greater corporate investment in proactive cybersecurity protection measures. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
As the single largest generator of jobs for the Department of Defense, Lockheed Martin's F-35 represents more than just innovation and freedom. It's an advanced technology program that fuels our nation's economic engine. As a leading-edge fighter, the F-35 has unprecedented capabilities that will help America and its allies defend freedom. And it's creating direct and indirect jobs for over 120,000 Americans and impacting more than 1,300 suppliers in 47 states across the U.S. Software developers in California, steel workers in Pennsylvania, and engineers in Georgia are all working to secure our skies. The F-35 Lightning II program. Securing freedom, securing jobs, securing America's future. To learn more, visit F-35.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. Veterans Affairs has been devoting more resources to treating mental illnesses among vets. The RAND Corporation will join us with a progress report. Plus, military drones are getting personal. We'll talk to the manufacturer of a lethal drone that fits in a backpack. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Diane Cochran of Kelly Anderson and Bill Bransford of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And we're up to
number two.
Bill Bransford's second most important federal news story of the week is from Politico. The headline is Super Committee Plans Reveal Chasm. And it's been interesting to me, Bill, to track the stories, just the gist of the stories about the Super Committee, because for a while, some of them sounded like journalists complaining that they couldn't get any leaks out of the Super Committee, seemed to be the essence of it.
That may very well be. And we know very little about what progress they're making or not making,
mm-hmm.
What direction they're going, what the ultimate compromise might look like, or where it may fall apart. And I guess that one of the reasons why I selected this as number two instead of number one is because it's sort of an ongoing saga. And really, I think the week, Thanksgiving week, if you're going to do a show that weekend, I don't know, or maybe the following week, that's going to be the number one story.
Mm-hmm.
What is the Super Committee's recommendation, or will they fail to reach an agreement? But right now, there's kind of like nothing's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that Congress isn't meeting, my number three story right now, doesn't really matter, because what's going to really matter is what is the Super Committee? And for federal employees, it could mean some very significant cutbacks, or they might just escape. We don't know.
What I have found interesting, Diane, about the whole Super Committee, some of the letters that have been written. In fact, Bill, the Senior Executives Association, I saw you and your group sent some recommendations to the Super Committee, all kinds of people weighing in. But what has surprised me, Diane, is the codification of a lot of things that affect federal employees that have been floating around for a long time but were never actually before now written down on paper and given to somebody. And that's the high three to high five conversion and some of those kinds of things that have kind of always been in the rumor mill. But until now, nobody's ever really said, well, let's at least take a look at actually doing some of these things.
And I think this is the time some of those things will happen. Some mm-hmm. of them a little more radical than others, but certainly the high five is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the other proposals that are going forward, as you might understand, the unions and the labor organizations are weighing in very heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain of the House and Senate committees that have recommended don't mess anymore with federal benefits
and
pay. But I think that's highly unlikely. There will be some changes, and they will require some legislation changes.
You know, the high three to high five, as Diane says, that's reasonable. It's also dramatic,
mm-hmm.
and it will cause a very strong reaction by a lot of federal employees, like, are you really messing with one of my most important benefits, almost like a third rail?
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's very little that can be done to change it. But the reality of it changing high three to high five is that there'd be very little impact on very little impact on a federal employee's annuity, especially in the time of a pay freeze.
I did some calculations on it, and Mike Causey did some too and ran them in his column. And the numbers really are not that dramatic. It sounds a lot worse than it is, and yet it still is. It's a little trim off the edge for sure.
Yeah, and where you're going to find the most resistance are those CSRS employees who are still on the rolls
mm-hmm.
that haven't retired, because that's a big impact for them.
Yeah.
But they're going to be gone soon. I mean, we're going to be phasing out CSRS, obviously, just by virtue of age.
Mm-hmm.
So, the high five isn't going to make much of a difference to the FERS or whatever evolution of FERS occurs in the future.
I think the real risk to federal employees is the increased retirement contribution for their annuity
mm-hmm.
for both FERS and CSRS employees, which is a very serious consideration. Even the president has recommended that be increased. And so I would expect at a minimum the president's suggestion of the 1.2% phased in over 3 years would probably happen from the Super Committee. And I'm hoping if that's all that happens, then federal employees are getting off pretty lightly.
I'm looking at the Super Committee tracker on federalnewsradio.com right now. The president, as far as the FERS contribution, recommending a 1.2% increase. Senators Lieberman and Collins proposing the same. Congressman Issa, the chairman of the Oversight Committee, proposing a 6.2% increase.
Keep in mind, that's on top of an 8% payment and on top of Social Security
mm-hmm.
that federal employees pay. So it'd be a very significant pay reduction
mm-hmm.
to receive the same annuity.
Sorry,
I suspect that the I can't remember which committee proposed it, but one of them proposed that CSRS contributions go to 10% versus 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to spur a lot of CSRS employees to say, I'm done.
That's ISA in the House Oversight Committee
exactly.
Also.
So that's...
I think that both of these proposals, the three to five on figuring the annuity simply because of the psychological effect,
mm-hmm.
and then the additional money that comes out of your out of your pay. If you can get, and I wanted this to be one of my stories this week, but I realized it was last week, is the 3.6% increase for Social Security and CSRS employees, and also an increase for FERS. And if you can get an increase in your annuity, if you're retired, you get nothing if you're on the payroll, and you have to pay more for your benefits.
Yeah.
Why? And if you have the option to retire, why wouldn't you go?
And CSRS will be phased out by virtue of the fact these changes are coming.
Now, I think of all of these proposals, of all of these recommendations, the ones that I thought were the most striking were Senator Lieberman, Senator Collins, because nobody would perceive either of them as being radically to one side or the other. You could make that argument about some of the other recommendations that have gone to the supercommittee. And historically, they have been very friendly, I think, to federal employees, I think it's fair to say.
The concern that SCA had about their proposal was, in particular, the FERS sick leave repeal, which is a part of what they're recommending. In 2010, FERS employees were allowed to have some credit toward their annuity, phased in between now and 2014. And the idea, this was proposed by the Government Managers Coalition, a group of the Senior Executives Association, other management groups, because their members were seeing large numbers of FERS employees as they neared retirement burning all their sick leave.
FERS flu is what Mike Fossey calls it.
Sometimes fraudulently, and other times, like sort of like if you have an alternative work schedule, you would schedule everything for when you were during the work week when you were at work. You'd use your sick leave. If you're a CSRS employee where you get credit, you'd schedule those doctor's appointments on your day off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's perfectly legal. But sometimes fraudulently, sometimes you just don't feel like getting up that morning. So we proposed that this law be enacted just to deal with this management problem. It's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And in fact, OPM studied it and said that there is a cost to having no credit for FERS. And that's how we got it through Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's being treated like it's just a benefit. Well, it is a benefit, but it's not just a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very unfortunate turn of events, because that battle was fought for 15 to 20 years to get the FERS sick leave credit instituted. I know as a CSRS person, you hoarded your sick leave because it counted and you really, really saved it. So FERS people didn't have the same incentive, and I would so hate to see that happen now after all those years of battling for that change.
So we quickly got a letter up to the supercommittee, and we wrote a letter to Senator Collins and Senator Lieberman because we want them to know that this was not just a benefit. This was actually a management efficiency issue, and it's very important. And when you're trying to create the public image, you don't want to that federal employees do good work. You don't want to create an economic incentive for them to not come to work.
Bill Bransford, story number two on the countdown is from Politico. The headline is Supercommittee Plans Reveal Chasm, and you can read it and all of the stories on this week's Federal News Countdown on the in-depth page at federalnewsradio.com. Diane Cochran's story number two when the Federal News Countdown continues in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Facero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
As the intelligence community looks for ways to cut its budget over the coming decade, it's turning to IT efficiency to be a big contributor. The director of national intelligence says he intends for agencies to get half their budget savings by implementing more collaborative and common IT architectures and migrating more services to cloud computing. DNI James Clapper says the stretch goal will take some upfront investment, but he hopes the IT initiatives will pay big dividends over the next 10 years.
General
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
When it comes to your health and that of your family, you want security and peace of mind. That's why more federal employees have chosen the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program for over 50 years. And it has one of the largest networks of doctors and hospitals. Who knew? That's the security of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. To find out more, visit whonew.fepblue.org or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
Drinking Stories. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Social media may reveal a lot about an underage college student's drinking. Researchers looked at language students used on sites like Facebook to describe their drinking and at the students' reports of how much they drank. At the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, Dr. Megan Marino says students who commonly use terms like wasted were more likely to be problem drinkers. So she says people who care about those students could talk with them about getting help.
I think our study provides some evidence that if they are worried, they probably have a legitimate reason to be able to approach that person and start that conversation.
The study in Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for October is the Arthritis Foundation. Did you know that losing weight and exercise can help relieve arthritis pain and prevent further joint damage? Go to arthritis.org and sign up for healthy tips, a movement tracker, and ways to get involved with the Arthritis Foundation. They offer exercise programs, wellness tips, and more for the 50 million Americans suffering with arthritis. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. This message brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is the hour of the week when two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories that they think are the three most important stories to people who work in government. They rank them in order from number three to number one and come into the studio and count them down with me on the Federal News Countdown. This week it's Bill Bransford from the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth and Diane Cochran of Kelly Anderson. And Diane, your story number two on the countdown this week is from the Federal Times. The headline is ISA proposes replacing FERS pensions with TSP-type plan. And there are a couple things in here that go a little bit beyond what we've seen both in the state and local level and what other people have proposed for the federal government employees.
Right, and here we go again with reinventing the federal retirement system.
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. Issa has proposed that they eliminate the FERS pension provision, that we go to a market-based type of pension, that the contributions are increased to 7%, versus what they are today. And also, this plan also includes the provision of a 10% increase for CSRS retirement contributions. Also, he wants to propose that anybody retiring before the age of 62 under FERS does not receive their benefit, their mm-hmm. pension. And that's pretty different from where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
And to eliminate the early retirement provision. So those are some pretty radical changes to FERS. And I, as I said before, the proposal for CSRS contributions go to 10%, I think will typically drive a lot of CSRS people to retire, mm-hmm. particularly in light of the fact we discussed last time that, you know, there's actually an increase coming this year for the first time in 3 years
yeah.
for annuitants, mm-hmm. for annuitants to 3.6%, 2.6% for FERS. So it's some pretty radical suggestions. Although looking at some of the other committees, House and Senate committees' suggestions. There's a lot of overlapping. So I think these things have some traction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's inevitable we're going to see some changes to the FERS retirement system again, yet again.
Now, there have been a number of proposals from the supercommittee and other sources, or to the supercommittee from a variety of sources, that would impact new federal employees. But
that's
Bill,
right.
The story and the line in this story that jumped out at me was federal employees with less than 5 years service, that means people right. who are already in government at the time the new plan is instituted, would not receive any pension when they retire. Now that sounds to me like you're telling somebody, you remember what we promised you when you signed up? Well, you're not going to get that.
Well,
and
it
that's
does.
Sounds
of course,
like a
of course.
Terrible precedent to
of
set.
Of course it does. And what's interesting, I'm very confused by Chairman Issa's proposal that's mentioned in this article, because you already have a TSP plan, which is like a 401k, where employees can contribute their own money with matching from the government.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have a very similar defined contribution plan, because that's the model for defined contribution plans.
Yeah.
So you have a similar plan. And is it going to only be employer contributions, or will employees have to pay for it? Because now you have to pay for your annuity. Will you have to put into that? And then you have the interesting thing in the Internal Revenue Code for a 401k. You have a limit on how much you can contribute each year,
mm-hmm.
and that corresponds to the TSP. So if you create a new defined contribution plan, will you raise the limit, or will you still have the same limit, or will those people who contribute the max already, will they be limited? There are so many unanswered questions that I don't understand it, but you're absolutely right. Anybody with less than 5 years of service, because, you know, under federal law, your service, pension vests
mm-hmm.
after 5 years.
Yeah.
So those people would not be affected. But to change it for anybody whose pension didn't vest is very, very interesting. And I'm not sure how this would work, or why people would necessarily want to work for the government.
Yeah, I'm not sure you can tell people that you've already promised something to that we're just going to blow that off. It's not really that big
didn't
a deal.
Count.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't
yeah.
count.
Yeah, redo.
Yeah.
We'll take a mulligan on this. Now, part of this, there's a comment here from Dan Adcock at NARF who that I'm not sure how much I agree with. He said ISIS plan would weigh federal employees' retirements too heavily toward the stock market and expose them to too much risk. If this plan looks like the thrift savings plan and the employees have the option of moving amongst the funds in the TSP or in this plan the way they do in the TSP, if you look at the TSP website, the numbers in the TSP are overwhelmingly in the G fund, which there's zero risk in. And so it seems to me that the risk in this plan wouldn't really be any different than the risk in the TSP.
Assuming that it was set up that way, we really don't have the details.
Well, that's a fair point.
We don't know if it would be. And it may very well be that you would have to you'd get this extra defined contribution money in a tax-deferred retirement plan. That you'd have to invest in the stock market or in some other kind of.
I can't imagine that would be.
I don't know.
The political hay that somebody could make with that of you're going to force federal employees into the stock market would just be.
I think so too.
Too much.
But I don't know the details.
Yeah.
One of the things that I have looked for and haven't found is the issue of the government contribution and TSP, the matching contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't been addressed that I can see. And I would suspect this new contribution wouldn't have any government matching.
Assuming it was a contribution,
it
wasn't something that you didn't have to pay for yourself.
Yeah. The other line in this that I thought was pretty stark. Adcock said ISIS plan to replace the defined benefit pension is better than a plan from Senators Tom Coburn and Richard Burr to cancel FERS pensions entirely for new employees and replace them with nothing.
That's right.
Just your TSP and Social Security, and that's the end of it.
That's all you have.
Now, if you have the option of increasing the match or of being able to somehow increase the amount that you can save in your own TSP plan, that at least would help a little bit, but to kind of replace it with nothing, you run into the situation.
It would make the federal government very non-competitive in the workforce,
right.
And you would end up with a substandard group of employees performing services to the American public.
Well, and I think you would wind up, too, Diane, with a group of people where you and I are sitting next to each other and we're working together on a program, and I'm looking at you going, I know she has this benefit and that benefit and the third benefit that I don't have just because I came along at the wrong time,
right.
And that can't be good for business.
Right. The other thing that I see as a possible problem here is if you are maxed out on your FERS, on your TSP contribution,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be able to get any tax deferred on your other contribution, whatever that might be.
Unless they amend the Internal
Unless
Revenue
they
Code.
Amend, which is not likely. Which is highly unlikely.
So if
in
they
this
do
situation.
That, and they still do that for the
so
federal government,
pay...
this, other employers around the country are going to say, "Well, why can't we offer
exactly.
that benefit?
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather get rid of my defined benefit plan and replace it with a defined contribution plan like the federal government has."
Right.
And so you run into other issues.
Well, there. I'm not sure there are that many employers in the private sector though that still have a defined benefit plan anymore. I mean, they're pretty much all gone.
No, there's still some. There's still some.
I wonder how many there still are. I don't know. Diane Cochran, your story number two in the countdown this week is from the Federal Times. ISA proposes replacing FERS pensions with TSP-type plan, and you can read it and all of our stories on the Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com. Number one is next from Bill Bransford and Diane Cochran on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose.
IT Professionals, the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council's Academy, is a unique interactive training and education program designed specifically for the federal IT community, both government and industry. Courses in leadership, best practices, and project management start soon, so don't wait. Register today at www.actgov.org/academy. That's www.actgov.org/academy.
Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp.
OPM Director John Barry says policy changes will incorporate lessons from past snow events.
We do have some changes that will be coming forward that will hopefully make it better. To the extent that we can arm our employees to be able to work effectively from alternative locations, that's better service to the taxpayer and allows them to do their jobs and keep the essential functions of government moving regardless of what the weather is.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, where we count down the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. This week, they're Diane Cochran of Kelly Anderson and Bill Bransford of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And we're up to...
Number one!
Bill Bransford's most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is, Justice Employees Fight Proposed Office Closings. And this is a story that I'm glad you brought in because we talked about it a little bit on the program this week, but it has not gotten a lot of coverage. And I think the reason is because it's not here in Washington, D.C. Is that a fair point?
Well,
do you think?
And some people might say, well, that's not that big a deal. It's just 94 employees. You know, this kind of stuff happens. But I picked it as my number one story because I think this is a harbinger of battles over the next several years as the spending cuts that will happen, that they're definitely going, they've already happened, as these spending cuts become even larger and larger, and as agencies have to make strategic decisions about programs to cut or employees to cut or where to cut, you have a constituency that's going to be affected. And that constituency has a senator or a congressman somewhere
mm-hmm.
who will make an issue, and there will be public reaction. And this will happen over and over again. This closing of these four offices in the antitrust division, offices have been around a long time, these 94 employees who obviously are well-established in their communities and don't want to relocate,
mm-hmm.
Been offered the opportunity to relocate to any other Justice Department office where there's an antitrust division office in operation or that will remain, or to Washington, D.C., which is a pretty humane thing. But some of these people really can't move because their spouses work, because they're taking care of aging parents, or they have a handicapped child that can't relocate. So there are a lot of, so they have a constituency, and you've gotten politicians already involved. advocating for them. And we're going to see this over and over again. It's not easy to make these cuts.
Now, Diane, you've been on both ends of this move, working for the government in outside of Washington, coming here, and then working at OPM and seeing this movement all over the government. What's the likelihood, not specific numbers, but just a general feel, that somebody who's has an established career in Atlanta, Dallas, Cleveland, Philadelphia is going to want to find and take a position in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, or D.C.? It doesn't seem like that's really a great matchup to me.
It's probably less likely in the non-DOD agencies and in DOD. Now, go back to DOD and BRAC back in the 80s. I mean, this was happening by the thousands where installations were closing, and the BRAC forced folks to make those moves. Now, DOD did the same thing. They guaranteed placement for these individuals wherever they wanted to go in DOD. It was called the Priority Placement Program, but I would say less than 50% took advantage of that, and there were thousands of employees that went out the door. So this is not new. This has been done on a big scale.
So that's the people that will take the jobs. Now, what's interesting, what Diane points to by comparison is BRAC, and BRAC is already a political compromise of we're going to make tough, politically objectionable decisions, but we're going to create a process that insulates us, and we're going to be able to blame BRAC for it. Mm-hmm. These decisions that are going to be made in the future, as we cut spending, don't have that same degree of cover. They're the political cover.
Well, unless so there's a cop-out like they're talking about with this civilian BRAC, where...
You're talking about the super committee.
No, I'm talking about the closure and disposal of federal property that Congressman Denham has proposed is essentially a civilian BRAC, and it's the same idea. We'll close facilities and sell off properties across the country, but we'll go through a BRAC-like process where people are insulated.
And if you can do that, you'll insulate. Otherwise, you're going to have constituencies that are going to get loud, and eventually this pendulum will swing back the other way, and people will say, well, maybe we really should have that program. Maybe we really should spend a little bit more money. Right now, it's completely over in the extreme for spending cuts.
But look what's happening in the post office.
Yeah.
You know,
same idea.
Very large scale.
They run a list up the flagpole, and almost every member of Congress goes bananas, even if there's not a post office in his or her district or state that's affected by it. Well, state's not true because there were some in every state, but there were a few members of the House that didn't have post offices or one or several slated for closure in their districts, and still nobody's happy, and we know what the financial situation is, the Postal Service. It's terrible.
So, yeah, I think that's a good microcosm, and that's the combination of the political reaction, people getting up in arms, and you know, they just don't have the money to continue. And if you compared it to a private company that had similar economic problems, they would probably declare a Chapter 11 bankruptcy and reorganize and restructure their union contracts and things like that. That would be a private company. But in the federal government, you can't do that because of the political reaction.
Well, how different is where the post office is today from where Chrysler and GM were 3 years ago?
The big difference is the Postal Service is part of the government. It's controlled by Congress.
But from a strictly financial perspective,
it's probably very similar.
Very similar, I would think. Mm-hmm. Bill Bransford's story number one in the countdown this week is from GovExec. The headline is Justice Employees Fight Proposed Office Closings, and you can read it at federalnewsradio.com on the in-depth page. One more story left in the countdown, Diane Cochran's number one story of the week, and we'll talk about it next on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Are you a mid-career professional thinking about improving your digital skills? Or maybe you're trying to retool with a focus on using social networking? American University's online certificate in digital media skills allows you to work full-time while gaining digital media skills to advance in your career or reposition yourself in the job market. The digital future is here. Learn more about American University's graduate certificate in digital media skills at american.edu/soc.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Andy Smith, principal at the McLean Group, and he'll tell us all about the business valuation practice and M&A practice of his firm. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the D.C. metro area. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Join senior government leaders from CMS, NIH, HHS, VA, and MHS at AFSEA Bethesda's 4th Health IT Day, November 2nd at the Mayflower Renaissance Hotel in D.C. Discussions will include managing security for a mobile point of care, joint electronic health records, federal health regulations and procurements, and big data management. AFSEA Bethesda thanks premier sponsors Accenture, Booz Allen Hamilton, Intel, Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, Northrop Grumman, SAS, and Vangent. Register at afseabethesda.org/healthitday.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the stories chosen as the most important federal news stories of the week by Bill Bransford of Shaw Bransford & Roth and Diane Cochran of Kelly Anderson. And Diane, your number one story of the week is from Federal Times. The headline is Radical Deficit Cutting Options on the Table. And we've talked about how some of those might affect federal employees on the program today. But I think this story is reflective of not just what how some of these it might impact federal employees, but to give people who work for the government a real sense of how serious it appears Congress is finally taking this situation.
Right. And I think most of the federal employees I've talked to feel like they're wearing a big target on their backs.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy for Congress to reach out to the federal government and the federal workforce because they own it and control it. But some of the things that have been proposed by several committees that are going to impact employees is to extend the pay freeze for 5 years, to cut the workforce by 10%. I think those things are inevitable. I think those things will happen.
I don't know about 5 years, but I think definitely three.
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
On the pay freeze.
Yeah, but also one of the most bizarre things I've seen was to eliminate within grade increases. Now, haven't we fought for years in the federal government on pay for performance?
Mm-hmm.
That has been defeated over and over again. And if you eliminate within grade increases, essentially you're talking about performance based increases again.
Well, the Bush administration tried to eliminate within grade increases and replace it with a pay for performance system where you would receive merit based increases every year.
And NSPS
failed. Now there's nothing.
Right.
Except the.
But here we are again talking about the same thing because times are so drastically difficult. Freezing senior executive bonuses. Now we already know senior executive pay is essentially there's no increase, there's no automatic increase for SES.
And it's near what GS 15 Step 10 is.
And in many cases below what GS 15 Step 10 are getting. So that's one of the most difficult ones. One of the ones I thought was most interesting was the proposal to limit contractor compensation, if it's taxpayer reimbursed, to $200,000. That's big.
That's big.
That's very big.
If it goes through, I doubt that that will. But that was one of the Democrats' proposals, I think. But lots of cost cutting to affect federal employees. No question about it. And it'll be interesting to see which of these actually comes up.
All right. So crystal ball time then. If you had to pick two of these, of all of the proposals that we've talked about today and all of them that you've heard from the super committee, Bill, what would be the two that you think are the most likely that would impact federal employees, that the super committee will actually adopt?
The 1.2% increase in the FERS contribution.
And you think that'll be the number?
I think it will be.
Okay.
I think one more year of the pay freeze. I think those are the two most likely things. And that. Those can be portrayed as significant contributions for federal employees. Now, the other thing that may come up where they may get caught up in the wider net is the chained CPI, which may very well become a part of, which means that everyone's pension, their FERS or CSRS pension will increase less each year than it would have under current standards. So that's the third one, but that's not just strictly federal employees.
I have a theory on the chain CPI, too, about why that one will go through, because nobody really understands it. When you say chain CPI to people, people kind of go,
And you're still going to get some increase.
Right.
You're just not going to get quite as much.
Uh-huh. Diane, do you have two that you think are most likely to go through?
I agree with Bill's two, but I think two others would be the high five. I think that'll actually go through. And I'm fairly certain that the retirement age will change to 62 versus 55.
Even for CSRS?
Yes. Well, I don't think CSRS. I mean FERS. I think FERS, the proposal to raise the retirement age to 62 is a very real possibility under FERS.
No matter how many years of service you have.
That's a big
one. Interesting.
I
do think another one that has a chance of getting in, and this is one I think the president also proposed, is to eliminate the FERS supplement for people who retire who are under 62 who get a Social Security payment.
Yeah.
I think that one might at least be modified.
Diane's thought about extending the retirement age to 62. What impact do you think that would have on the senior executive service, Bill?
Well, I think you're going to see a lot of people who are under 62 who are now eligible giving very serious consideration to retiring perhaps before they thought they were going to. Somebody who's 56 years old with 30 years of service who's eligible to retire now and 62, they might have been thinking, well, I'll work a couple more years. If the rule changes, they might go a few years sooner.
And that just extends the impact of what you talked about earlier in the program, Diane, which is that situation where we are age-wise with almost half of federal employees being in that range already.
One thing FERS has done, though, in the last, 20, almost 30 years it's been around, one thing it has done is made it easier for employees to come in and out because we no longer have the 30 or 40-year career person necessarily because they are contributing to Social Security, they are in a 401k, and I think the longevity in government is being impacted by FERS. In fact, people are coming and going quite easily. So the economy will keep people in longer, I think, unless jobs on the outside pick up. But you're right. Those folks that are in that cusp between 55 and 62 will likely retire, I think. And that's part of the brain drain that's going to happen.
They'll feel like they're stuck here. Now, of course, even though, you know, keep in mind, even though raising it to 62, you still have the law enforcement exception, and you still have discontinued service retirement for people who are involuntarily separated, which I hear the, no proposals to change that.
I saw something on the law enforcement. I saw one proposal. I can't remember what committee mentioned that they thought it was, you know, unrealistic to allow them to retire so early at age 50 that it wasn't, you know, fiscally responsible. So I think there's talk about that. But you're right, it probably won't go anywhere.
All right. All of this, though, is contingent on the fact that the super committee will actually come to some kind of agreement, which we don't know about yet. So I'll ask you to do the crystal ball deal again. Bill, do you think the super committee will actually make a decision and submit a proposal to Congress for a vote, or are we going to sequestration, do you think?
I am cautiously optimistic, and I could be wrong, but I think they're going to agree to something.
Diane?
I do, too. I think they'll agree to the common ground that all the committees have recommended, and they'll find some of the least controversial things to come forward with.
Even though what Republicans say they won't stand for is what Democrats want, and what Democrats say they won't stand for is what Republicans want.
Well, the Democrats have already blinked a little bit with the latest offer to, if you give us tax increases, we'll give you some cutbacks on Medicare. And so, you know, that's kind of an area of compromise that they're willing, have indicated a willingness to take, and Republicans so far haven't agreed to any ability to raise revenues, except this group of 100 bipartisan people that one of my stories talked about, which talks about doing what needs to be done and having tax increases on the table. And there's some Republicans in that group as well.
I think if they were listening today, they would agree that it was a terrific Federal News Countdown. Thanks to both of you. I appreciate it. Diane Cochran, your story number one is from the Federal Times. The headline is Radical Deficit Cutting Options on the Table. Thank you both for being on the program today.
Thank you, Francis. It's been a big pleasure.
Thank you, Francis.
Diane Cochran of Kelly Anderson, Bill Bransford of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. You can hear the Federal News Countdown again anytime you want. On the In-Depth page, see all the stories that we counted down today. And the second hour of In-Depth with Francis Rose for Friday is right around the corner. Stand by.